this past week, and the Boston Celtics are here tonight at the Golden 1 Center. And Sean Grandy, the Celtics play-by-play man, is with us now here on the Lowdown. Sean, 2 years of WrestleMania tickets and a box of Roman Reigns t-shirts if you leave Isaiah Thomas here.
Is a Roman Reigns t-shirt a prize?
Absolutely. Okay, we'll make a combination. Roman Reigns and John Cena t-shirts.
The irony, and I was just thinking, I just had this thought, and I had two thoughts when I get to Sacramento. The first, given everything that's going on today, wouldn't it have been fun if Phil Jackson had a Twitter account back in the days when he used to come here every May? Then it really would have been something. But the last time we got to Sacramento, Isaiah Thomas was not a member. Isaiah Thomas was traded to the Celtics when we were last here in Sacramento, because the game last year, as you guys may remember, was in Mexico City. So the Celtics haven't been here in 2 years. It's literally the entire franchise has, and most of the roster has turned over since the last time we were paid visit to your fair city.
So that's a no. You're not going to leave him.
So, okay, 3 years of WrestleMania tickets. Just leave him here.
We got to up the offer. What do you mean?
They're no good to me. I've been in the league. This is my 19th year in the league. I don't get to go to WrestleMania. I think 1 year we were in Chicago, the year 2006. I'm not sure. We were like in the city the day of, and then flew to the next city. But offering someone in the NBA WrestleMania tickets, you want to talk about SummerSlam?
Let me work on the offer, and we'll get it going.
So how about Isaiah though? He was good here. He was okay in Phoenix, but something now, Sean, has clicked. Obviously in Boston, where he's turned into an MVP type candidate. What have you seen as his game has grown?
Well, first of all, don't you just love that none of us knew what we were talking about, or that there was no, that nobody said, that things can still happen that we didn't see coming, is just a beautiful part of sports. That a guy that has just been, we thought Isaiah could be good. He was put almost immediately here into a position to be the guy, because there wasn't a guy. There wasn't a go-to offensive guy in the Celtics when he got here in 2015. But to watch him grow into that role has been pretty spectacular. To watch him do what he does when everybody knows he's going to do it. The last 5-6 weeks and all of these games at home the Celtics have had, and these fourth quarters, it has become less of an NBA game than it is. It's a Broadway show now. Everyone knows what's going to happen. They just want to see it live. They just want to see Isaiah have these fourth quarters. I think there is an element in the NBA when your athleticism and your knowledge, there's a curve. Your basketball IQ and your knowledge and your way to play in the NBA and your go-to moves and the things that you do that make you the NBA player you are, though that curve goes up as your athleticism goes down as you get older. But there's that sweet spot, boy, in your mid-late 20s when those two things start to – and Isaiah is just hitting that spot where here's a guy, he's an offensive savant, and now he has figured out how he can score in the NBA, possession after possession. He's making the right plays most of these times, even in the fourth quarter. It's not like he's taking 20 shots to get these 13 points a game that he's getting in the fourth over the last few weeks. So he has figured it out. He has a team that's built around him. There's an element of the 2001 Sixers that had the perfect guys around Iverson. I don't like to talk about Iverson much anymore, because even though I used that as a comparison for a while, Iverson never did the things that Isaiah's done the last 5, 6, 7 weeks.
Sean, you mentioned, a player reaching kind of a sweet spot, and it kind of looks like this team is really kind of getting toward a sweet spot. You have a lot of good things in place, but most importantly, you guys have a lot of picks. You have a lot of movement you can make. Is this team still going to be active and making some moves, or do you think that they're set with what they have?
I would say willing. Active depends on who's on the other end of the phone and who are the players that truly become available when, in another couple of weeks. And it has become, I think Celtic fans are almost at the point where they've been expecting something big for so long, for the 3 or 4 years, that they're almost willing to kind of put their faith now in this team that, as soon as everything happened in 2013, and Doc Rivers left, and Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce go, Celtic fans had no patience, as nobody does on the East Coast, so they wanted it right away. All right, what's the next Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen trade? And at the time, Rondo was the only, name player, the star player, and obviously we know how that turned out, left. But, how do you get Kevin Love? How do you get Carmelo Anthony? How do you get Boogie Cousins? How do you get Jimmy Butler? How do you get these guys? And, I think Celtic fans still, want to be that elite team and realize Boston right now is on that second tier. Here's the danger. 2 years ago, when we got to Sacramento, the Celtics had been a year and a half under Brad Stevens. They were the 25th best team in the league. They were 41-87. That was Brad Stevens' start in 128 games in a year and a half. 41-87. When you're 25th in the league, you can roll the dice. When you are the fifth or sixth best team in the league, as the Celtics have been now for two full years, somebody had a great thing, and it was actually a tweet that I got, and I told the guy when he tweeted, I messaged him right back. I said, I'm stealing this in every interview I've done. It's the Celtics are like Jenga right now, where one piece, you need to make a move, but if you do it wrong, you can go back. Now all of a sudden you're looking at a long way to fall from fifth or sixth best team in the league. So there's a big danger in giving up. You know, if to add a Jimmy Butler, to add a star, you know, a superstar player, are you giving up a Jay Crowder? Are you giving up an Avery Bradley? Are you giving up a core player that's part of this, you know, sort of this renaissance for Boston?
Boston Celtics radio play-by-play man Sean Grandy with us here on the Lowdown. Sean, the Celtics right now 33-18, but it really took you guys a while to get going. What clicked? Because we were watching you at the beginning of the season, like, it's not there. We don't see that magic. And then suddenly, I think even Isaiah said, yeah, we're not ready. We're not a playoff team or something along those lines. And then suddenly, you guys just started winning games.
I would almost go a little bit the other way and say the record. Last year, I'll give you an example. I'm a big fan of scoring differential, of scoring margin as a true indication of how well a team is playing over a long period of time. And last year, the Celtics have 18 losses now. Last year, they lost their 19th game on January 12th, something like that. So, you know, almost a month earlier, they already had 19 losses. They lost a game in New York to drop to 19-19, but their scoring margin was +3, which is, that's really good. That's top 10 in the league, maybe better than that. And it was an indication they had lost a lot of close games. This year, the Celtics come into the game tonight 33-18, fifth best record in the NBA. Their scoring margin isn't as good as it was when they were 19-19 last year, which is an indication that they're getting by. They're winning close games they didn't last year because you got Isaiah having these fourth quarters. You have some veteran guys making some plays. Isaiah's getting to the free throw line a lot. So I would suggest that the Celtics' record this year is a little better, particularly in this last run, which they went from 13-12 to, you know, they're 20-6 in the last 26 games, which is obviously an elite record, and this is a really good team. But I'm not sure we've seen yet how good they can be because the Celtics in 51 games have only had, I think, 21 where they've had everybody. Between Horford being out early in the year, Jay Crowder was hurt early in the year, Avery Bradley not going to be on this trip, is going to go maybe 4 or 5 weeks without playing, and that's a long time. So I don't think we really know yet how good this team can be. If something has clicked, it's that they've got, you know, they have a go-to guy now in Isaiah in the fourth quarter. I think Al Horford's numbers are not – there's a mini Garnett element in that his numbers were going to come down coming to Boston, but he's doing a lot of things to help you win. I think the step forward that Jay Crowder has made continues to go overlooked, and I believe for, you know, years – this could be a 30-for-30 if you go back for the Celtics 2 years ago and say, what if I told you the Celtics would trade Rajon Rondo for Jay Crowder and get the better of the deal by far? That was inconceivable when the deal happened. And look at, you know, the player that Jay Crowder has become. So it's a really good team. I'm not ready to say, as good as the record has been, I'm not ready to say they've completely clicked or we know yet how good they can be.
Wow. Sean, hang tight 1 second. We're going to give away these Kings tickets here.
All right, Sean, you were talking about not knowing the entirety of what the – how good this team is, but if you guys literally are chasing Cleveland without a move, let's say you guys don't make any moves, can you beat the Cavs in a series?
No, I don't think, no. And certainly not. Listen, there's always what you do is you put yourself in position to be in position, and maybe LeBron slips on a banana peel at some point, and there's something unthinkable. I've never been, again, 19 years of doing this, I've never entered a season in which it seemed such a foregone conclusion what the NBA Finals was going to be. And it has also been my experience that whenever we are completely convinced that something is absolutely going to happen, that's when it doesn't. I mean, the Celtics and Lakers, and you know, they should have had the trilogy. Everyone remembers 2008 and obviously 2010, which went 7 games. 2009 was probably those two teams at their peak, and then Kevin Garnett gets hurt late in the year, and the Celtics weren't. You know, the Celtics were matching their 08 season. And probably would have been better in the playoffs, which we learned a year later. But one injury can change every single thing. So I think the Celtics are certainly in position. I'm not sure yet. I'm not ready to go out on a limb and say the Celtics are going to beat Toronto. in a seven-game series. The Raptors have had a crazy, you know, bizarre roller coaster year. They were step for step with Golden State for, you know, a lot of November and into December, and then they've just pretty much gone south since then. DeRozan's been hurt, but there's a lot of experience, and there's been a couple of Celtics beat them without DeRozan a couple of weeks ago, but there have been a couple of big brother, little brother games yet where the Raptors aren't really ready yet to surrender the division number two spot yet. So I think, you know, a lot of people are kind of hoping for a Boston-Toronto series in that, you know, East kind of semifinal sort of thing to see who is Cleveland's challenger, and then here comes Washington out of nowhere. So there's, you know, there's some fun stuff, you know, happening in the East.
Sean, there are so many interesting little elements to this team, and one of them kind of goes back to what we started our conversation talking about, Isaiah Thomas and his amazing exploits in the fourth quarter. But I ask you two things. What do you make of the stat that the team is still being outscored in the fourth quarter when he's doing that, and how is that affecting the chemistry of the players?
Only you would be so you know, that's like this Keen analysis, and it's not my place. Listen, I struggle sometimes in Boston because I'm sort of the anti-homer. You know, we are in the shadow of, you know, Mike Gorman and Tommy Heinsohn on the TV side. We have such a, you know, Cedric Maxwell and I have such a contrast to them because they are old school, carry on the Johnny Most tradition of, you know, homerism, which I think has, you can make the case wherever you stand on play-by-play that there should, you know, you should be a homer, or you shouldn't be a homer. It's something I've never been able to do. But I do these interviews, and I don't bring it. If somebody brings it up, okay. But here's the dirty little secret of the fourth quarters. Isaiah may be getting 13, but he's given up 12. And the Celtics aren't extending, you know, all these dramatic games that have made Sports Center and whatever. The Celtics have led by three going into the fourth, and they win by two. So they've been amazing to watch. But defensively, there is a run. The Celtics have kind of, during the seven-game win streak, have been much better on the defensive end. And this is an amazing number in the NBA. The Celtics went through a run from right around mid-December until this last winning streak in which they were fourth from the bottom in the 27th in defensive rating. I don't want to get too wonky with the numbers, but basically how many points you're giving up per possession. 27th out of 30 in anything is horrendous. So defensively, they were just brutal in this stretch. They were 11-7 in those 18 games, in which they were one of the worst defensive teams in the league, which tells you just how good the offense was, just how good Isaiah was. And in the old school, this is where you have to change your thinking about what you're seeing in front of you. All of us would say, you can't win like that. You can't win championships. You can't win whatever. But, you know, the teams that are winning now are the offensive teams, so maybe you can. When Golden State won 2 years ago, everyone's like, oh, you can't win that way. You can't. They were the number one defensive team in the league, too. So, you know, it's still obviously of critical importance, and it's why I don't think the roster is exactly where you need it to be. The Celtics are not going to be a good rebounding team, no matter what, because of the roster they have and the way they play. But defensively, once they tighten things up, as they did these last few games, that's what this latest win streak has been about. But, yeah, that's exactly right. Celtics defensively, it's been a great show to watch. But you're talking about Isaiah as an MVP candidate, and he is. And the reason is because if in a year in which James Harden is the presumptive favorite right now, I think it's safe to say that defense no longer is really applies to MVP.
Sean Grandy, the Celtics play-by-play man, with us here on the Lowdown. So you just listed rebounding and you just listed defense as things the Celtics need. So I assume Danny Ainge has absolutely zero interest in Carmelo Anthony.
You know what's interesting about Carmelo? I don't think that it could happen in Boston. And you have the salary, you have the contract. I sometimes phrase it this way. Let's have fantasy world for a second. Let's put aside salary, and let's put aside having to match it and a trade that you could put together for Carmelo. Where does Carmelo fit on the Boston Celtics? And going back to what something I've been saying, people think in defense and think in rebounding. 2 years ago, Isaiah Thomas gets here, and the Celtics overachieve because they have a go-to guy to score in the second unit. Last year, the Celtics won more games than they probably should have. Why? They had a go-to guy who could score on the second unit in Evan Turner. That's what the Celtics don't have this year. They have Marcus Smart as their best player on the second unit and their sixth man. And defensively and every intangible you could have, Marcus Smart, I guarantee you guys, tonight he will make a play at some point. He will come up with a loose ball. He will come up with a rebound. He will come up with a steal because he does it every night. He's the kind of player you absolutely love on your team. But he's not a go-to, I need a bucket and I need a run stopper in the in that second unit when you're on the road late in the third, early in the fourth. Carmelo Anthony would almost be perfect for the Celtics roster in that capacity, and also would give Boston this option to go with a killer lineup of Carmelo at the 4, Horford at the 5, Jay Crowder at the 3. And the things you could do are amazing. If Carmelo Anthony was in the same spot that Stephon Marbury was in 2009, where Marbury was untradeable and you couldn't touch him, then he got released and bought out, and everybody was lining up. And he ended up on the Celtics, and he was a perfect, he was an addition. He helped them win a playoff game, against Orlando in the second round. So Carmelo Anthony is a perfect addition to the Boston roster, but you can't. There's no way to make a deal. There's no way to match the salaries, and obviously the Celtics could be a facilitator if the Clippers or somebody else were interested. But there's generally a negative feeling towards Carmelo in Boston and in a lot of places around the league. I'm, as a lifelong holder of minority opinion, that's sort of another one I have. I kind of like Carmelo, and I think in the right spot, on somebody's second unit or as a not the guy. I kind of always wish he had gone to Chicago a couple of years ago when he had the chance to do that, and play on that team, because it would have been interesting to see, because he's always been great on the national team. But it's hard for me to see a team putting together the assets to make a deal as obviously willing as Phil Jackson is to move on from it.
Sean, whether we're talking about Carmelo going there, DeMarcus going there, Butler going there, Kevin Love, whoever it is, everybody seems to be talking about the Brooklyn picks that Danny Ainge has, that you guys have. What does Danny Ainge think of those picks? Because he could keep those and still boost the team. What does he think?
I think he's fine doing it. It's all assets. Assets are great until if at some point you have to make an evaluation of them and say, all right, well, this is more valuable than a player I could get back for them. I think, I'm not saying that the number one pick in the draft this year, the Nets pick next year, is untradeable, but it pretty much is. I mean, you're staring at, there's virtually, the Nets have to play 500 the rest of the way to not have the worst. There is a 7-game gap right now with 30 to play between the Nets and the 29th team in the NBA, which is Phoenix. It's amazing. And keep in mind, in this league in which we know we don't talk about it out loud much, but we know there is a certain game that teams are going to play in the second half of the year if they don't necessarily have motivation to win games and they want to be in that lottery. The Brooklyn Nets have zero motivation to lose games. Zero. And they are 7 games behind the second worst team in the NBA. That boggles my mind. So, is that pick untradeable? I mean, nothing's untradeable, but you're staring at almost a guaranteed top three pick and maybe the top pick in the draft. And just what the Celtics need is the guard heavy top two or three. And, suddenly the Celtics roster, guys can't get in games. James Young could probably play somewhere, but there's no, how's he going to get ahead of Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart and Isaiah Thomas and now Terry Rozier? And Jaylen Brown has been in the rotation from the beginning of the year as a 20-year-old. So, It's a tough spot.
Hey, Sean, for us doing this job, we all probably started out loving sports, and there's no cheering in the press box. We understand that. But I have to tell you, I grew up a Laker fan, and you work with the one man that I hated more than any other Celtic on the planet. That dude used to work the boards like crazy. But I wonder, do you have an all-time favorite Celtic or an all-time player that you just absolutely hated?
Yeah, I hated the Celtics. I grew up a Knicks fan. I'm from New York. Like most of the Celtics have a broadcast history of, well, first of all, the Celtics history, we can talk about Red Auerbach, Johnny Most, the two big ones at the top in terms of broadcast and running the franchise, and then later on guys like Howard David and Spencer Ross who were broadcast, all New Yorkers. It's a long New York history. I remember talking to Red about, I'm sort of the last Celtic announcer who ever got the I remember meeting Red on a flight back to D.C., and I got called back to the plane. It was like seeing, Tony Soprano in the back room and kind of getting the sort of, the talking to and the get-to-know-you thing and just having like a 15-20-minute conversation and sort of getting the papal blessing from Red. And it kind of occurred to me years later that I'll be the last one, obviously, to ever get that. But yeah, I hated the Celtics. I hated them growing up. I was a Knicks fan. When Larry won the MVP in 84 instead of my guy, Bernard King, I was devastated, as any 12-year-old would be, by that development. But it's funny to see Max. I work with, doing MMA now. I work with a guy named Jimmy Smith, who's my analyst on Spike doing Bellator, and he's a huge Laker fan, so I have to deal with this all the time. Like, you know, I'm constantly dealing with the Celtic Laker thing, and it puts me in this, you know, unusual spot as this, you know, defending the longtime history of the Celtics when that wasn't me. But Max still brings out, you know, the Laker thing is real. Max will be prominently featured in the 30 for 30 coming out this summer. They interviewed him a couple of months ago for that, and it's still real. I mean, I remember sitting next to him in Game 7. Max is, you know, is very much too cool for school and a lot of elements and whatever, but he's still affected by the, you know, by the Celtic Laker thing. He's, I think, in the Bird Magic HBO documentary, his line is, you know, if I saw any of those guys on the side of the road on fire and I had a glass of water, I would drink the water. that's how these guys feel about it. And he was there. I remember Magic being around us in 2010 during game seven. He was, you know, he was at Staples Center. He was sort of around, and it was, and I remember after the game, and he was sort of celebrating and kind of coming up afterwards, and Max was not, you know, like, he's a broadcaster and whatever, but he was still, the Celtic Laker thing runs, you know, very deep to this day. It's like you think they have, you know, like these old Civil War things where they'd eventually kind of get together and all shake hands and whatever, but it doesn't always happen that way. I had an interesting moment in the media room at the Garden a couple of weeks ago when Kevin McHale came in for TNT to do the game, and I was having dinner with Rick Mahorn, and Kevin McHale comes over, and it was just to watch the two of them just sort of talking, and it was like living a 30 for 30,
right?
Being in a three-dimensional, you know, conversation that was existing in front of you.
But just stand up and back away, Sean. Yeah, just right. Back away slowly, yeah. Get out of the way, move all tables and chairs.
But you have to love that. I think that, you know, I love the history, and I think it, you know, I love that guys keep it alive.
Sean, thank you for being so generous with your time. We'll see you tonight at the Golden One Center.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you. All right, that's Sean Grandy, the Boston Celtics play-by-play man. I'm going to